Welcome, Tethered Nation. This is your number one saddle hunting resource. Now, buckle up, Buttercup. It's about to get real.
We're in the truck, headed to Iowa. I'm joined with Ernie and Jared. We're headed down to do a little chit-chat with the hunting public in Iowa. They're giving us all the coordinates to all of their trees that they've hunted over the past few years, so we're going to go steal all their spots. What's going on, Ernie? Jared?
Not much. I'm sitting in the back of the truck amongst many saddle hunting items.
Just another day. Just got back from Deer Fest. Had a pretty good weekend there, and on the road down to go visit these guys and see if we can get our tethers on.
There you go. Yeah, who knew you could do a podcast in a truck?
It yeah, looks pretty exactly. Ridiculous.
I kind of feel like there should be some Top Gun music in the background. The people driving by look over and, yeah,
with
we look ridiculous.
With these goofy headsets on and, we look like idiots. That's all right.
Well, we are idiots, but it's okay.
Well, yeah, I have no problem being an idiot. I've got a lot of years of practice.
Is that what Val would say?
Well, she'd probably put it in a different term, but sure.
Well, we can't use that term without getting that little E beside this. It says we got explicit. Yeah. So we were talking a little bit before we hit the record button about hunt plans. Ernie, what do you got planned for this year?
Oh, and it's crazy. I'm basically starting in September. I'm booked out. I've got an elk hunt in Montana, an elk hunt in Idaho, whitetail in Georgia, Missouri, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and possibly Illinois. So, yeah, it's going to be crazy. And then once New Year's turns over, we got ATA, and then I'm heading to Guatemala to go fishing for a week.
Rough life.
Yeah, it's
that sounds awful.
The hard part is, you're on the road so much, you're hunt here for 3 days, try and kill something and get back just so you can spend a few days with your kids before you got to head out on the next one.
What about you, Jared?
Well, it looks like my season's going to start early September in Kentucky. I'm headed down there with with Parker from Southern Ground. Several other saddle hunters going to be there. So really looking forward to that. After that, probably the opener for West Virginia for a few days, and then I'll be headed to Michigan for the Public Land Challenge.
Yes, that is something we need to talk about.
Yeah.
The Public Land Challenge. That's exciting. Man, I don't quite know what to think about that. I've only ever heard horror stories from Michigan hunting, and now we're supposed to go to a state I can't say I've never hunted there, because me and Ernie, we hunted there last year with John Eberhardt, but that wasn't really a hunt. I mean, we showed up. He took us to his JV stands. Isn't that what you called it?
No, they were like the training wheel stands. I mean, it was basically he put us in the area that he didn't care if we screwed up his hunt for the rest of the season by being there. He was very nice to accept us in our long hair and no scent lock and all of that stuff. And he put us in a couple of stands by some apple trees that basically, no matter how bad we messed up the area, it wasn't going to screw up his hunt later in the year.
That's my only experience in Michigan. That was last year, and we hunted a total of, maybe 2.5 hours in the afternoon and maybe 2 hours in the morning. Yeah. So I've hunted a grand total of, call it, 5 hours on the high side in the state of Michigan.
Well, we saw deer. I mean, it wasn't like we didn't see deer. Oh, we saw both morning and afternoon.
Oh, I could have shot deer. I mean, I could have shot small, but I had two small bucks in range. I had does in range. I could have definitely shot deer. I didn't want to get beat up by John Eberhardt by doing something wrong. So I was very careful about what I was going to shoot. Man, can you imagine if we had shot a spike or something just to fill our tag?
Walking through.
Oh my God. What would he have done?
Yeah. Remember we got out of the stand that night and the landowner was waiting by our truck. And so, yeah, hey, we just killed the littlest deer on your property. Can we get some help dragging this thing out?
That would have been awesome. Jared, have you ever been to Michigan?
I have never been to Michigan.
You've never been to Michigan?
I've never even been to Michigan. So it's going to be a lot different for me. So yeah, I have no clue what to expect.
So what's going to be your strategy going in, Jared? Take me through, like, how you're going to a state you've never been. You know that the pressure is crazy high. What do you do?
To me, I'm looking to see what everybody else is doing. I mean, I'm looking for, you know, where everybody else is accessing, where they're possibly hunting at, and I'm going to do the exact opposite of that.
How are you doing that? How are you going to know if you don't live there? How do you figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to do. I mean, it might take 2-3 days to figure out what's going on, where people are at, and then trying to look for those overlooked spots that people aren't hitting. It's a tough thing to do when you've only got, you know, 4 or 5 days to hunt. So it's, you know, do you spend 3 days scouting and trying to figure it out? Or, I mean, that's kind of my approach to things, is spend more time scouting than hunting, try to figure something out. But,
well, and I think that's kind of the point, right? The challenge is,
yeah,
most of us have never been there. I mean, there's a couple of guys that we know from the area that we can get some tips from, but I mean, we're going to have to figure it out quick.
Which, and I don't think that's necessarily cheating. I mean, if I was going to go to public land and name a state, Kentucky, the first thing I would do is call up all my buddies, everybody that I know.
Absolutely.
Start talking to people on social media and figure out the lay of the land. I mean, so I don't know. I don't think it's any different for the state of Michigan. Figure out what public land holds deer. I mean, you can do things like look in the Michigan state record books, and you can start looking at what counties get the biggest deer. And you can figure out that way. You can look at the records and figure out what counties and what areas hold the public land. Tools like OnX to figure out where the public land pieces are. I mean, there's lots of stuff you can do prior to actually showing up for the hunt.
Right. Another thing that I like to do when I'm searching for a place to hunt out of state, and I'm doing, you know, Google searches, looking on forums and stuff, if you find an area that doesn't get mentioned at all, that's actually probably a better place to look at, because if you're doing a search for a place and it's coming up a lot in conversation on forums or wherever, it's more than likely going to have a lot more pressure. So like when I went to Wyoming last year, the area I was looking at, I couldn't really find anybody talking about it. It may not have been the best like trophy area, but as far as pressure goes, it might've been a little bit less than some of the more talked about spots.
Well, and you guys had plenty of bucks around. I mean, there was no shortage of deer when you guys were out.
Yeah, I mean, we found deer right away. So it was, I guess the strategy paid off. But
now, am I correct? And doesn't OnX have a roadless layer?
It does, yep.
That you can try and find the areas that are hardest to get to and focus on that, just because that's where people aren't going to be.
Yeah, that hunt that I did in Wyoming last year, that's actually how I found that spot, was with the roadless layer.
I've never used the roadless layer.
So the roadless layer, like, it's like a shaded overlay on the map. So as you get farther from roads, like anything close to road is black. As you get farther from road, it turns like a purple white color. So if you turn that layer on, it automatically shows you all the areas that are pretty remote, so
it's,
you can really dial
like
it in.
It's basically like a pressure gauge, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
It shows you where the easy access is, and you just go to the places that aren't.
That's a good idea. I didn't know that existed.
They've also got another really cool layer for, and I use this out west, for recent burns, forest fires,
yes,
etc.
Yes.
So it has info on there, and you know, those burns after a year or two are just nothing but lush food. Makes it another place you can target.
Now, when you talk about scouting, Jared, you kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier. What do you do when you show up? Do you spend half your quote unquote hunt, half your vacation scouting where you can't even kill a deer? Or do you just go straight into the woods and hit it straight away? I have an opinion on this, but I want to hear your thoughts first, Jared and Ernie.
I think in a place like Michigan, I'm assuming it's where we're going to be is probably a little more open, maybe not as heavily timbered. I could be completely wrong, but I'm going to pick out areas on a map, you know, that I think are going to hold deer. And then I'm going to try to set up where I can observe, where I'm possibly still in the game, but in a spot where I could watch and see what's going on and then make my adjustments from there. So where I hunt in West Virginia, it's so heavily timbered, I really can't do that. So, you know, observation sits aren't as, they don't work as good. But in a hunt like that where I could sit back and watch, if I can pick up any kind of pattern at all, you know, as quick as I can, that's my goal. But I mean, it's obviously sometimes hard to do in certain areas where you can't see really far, but I think that's a pretty good tactic to use, you know, if you've only got a couple days to hunt, to observe and then be really aggressive on that first move. I mean, move right in there. I mean, you can't sit back. If you've only got 4 or 5 days to hunt, you can't sit back hoping it's going to happen. You've just got to move in and make it happen.
Yeah. And Ernie, I know that you're big public land experience is more focused on the Western world out in elk country, but I don't have, do you have much experience going to a new public piece looking for whitetails, something like that?
Not very successful experiences.
Yeah.
you know, I hunt a lot of public land in Minnesota, but most of it I've hunted the same pieces for 10 years. And so I know every little piece of water, every little terrain feature and stuff like that. And I kind of learned just from years of being in the same area, kind of the habits and whatever else is on the deer. That's one thing that I could really use some improvement on is my cyber scouting and any of the, you know, going into a new area blind and trying to figure it out. That's definitely one of my weaknesses that I'm hoping to work on this year. And so I've been, you know, trying to read and learn as much as I can and get in the woods and as much as I can to try and put some of that knowledge to use in property I've never been on before, just to see how close I get. You know, I'll do all the steps and then go out there and see how close I get to where I find sign or whatever else. So it's going to be interesting. This is going to be like dropping into a new place without knowing what I'm doing. That's for sure.
Yeah. I feel like I'm actually pretty good at the cyber scouting piece. I mean, I've got a decade of experience in the Army, and a lot of what you do early in your career in the military, is you learn how to read a map and you learn how to do terrain association when you're doing land navigation, both at night and in the daytime. And so you really start to get a feel for translating terrain features on a map to what they're going to look like in the real world. So I'm actually pretty good at looking at a topo map and a satellite map and being able to pick out some of the key spots to focus in on. Deer are, in my opinion, deer are slaves to terrain. They live their life based on terrain and food. They use the terrain to their advantage. So things like saddles and benches, those are real terrain features that affect deer movement. And I read an article many, many, many years ago by Bill Winky, and he talked about how ingress and egress, access, is the most important thing for his hunt. So he focused on, in this article, this is probably 20 years ago, he focused on terrain features as opposed to anything else, saddles, ridges, benches, leeward slopes on hills, etc. And then he focused on getting in and out undetected. And a lot of how I choose to hunt now revolves around that. How can I get in and out undetected, which is the reason why I hunt out of a boat a lot. And how can I use the terrain to my advantage? So that's a skill that I think is very important. And it's funny, I was doing some cyber scouting for a hunt we're doing this fall, and I sent a bunch of Onyx pens to places that I had picked out on the map blind, and I sent it to a guy that lives in the area where I was hunting, where I'm going hunting. And I said, hey, look at these pins and let me know what you think. And I highlighted the areas in a different color that I really like, that I think are going to be the best. And this was purely based on terrain, based on where I could get in and out, where I didn't think other people were going to be. And then based on more, even more than that, was terrain features, specifically saddles and benches. And the spot I picked out was a spot that he knew very intimately, and he had killed a 160 on it. And he said, man, where you dropped that, you know, this specific pin, he's like, that's right where I killed that big giant buck. So that's definitely something you can learn with time if you have experience, but it definitely takes effort to figure out mapping and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. That's funny you said that, because me and my buddy Grant, we do the same thing. We'll start breaking down an area, cyber scouting, and we'll do it independently without really talking about it. And I'll mark all my spots and he'll mark his. And 99% of the time we're marking the same exact locations. I mean, once you figure it out,
it's not rocket science. It's once really you figure not, it out. Yeah. It's funny. I enjoy it. I love taking a map of whatever and trying to figure out where they are. Sean, our buddy Sean Chadwick, he told me that when he travels a lot for work, he'll bring his Onyx, and that's one of the things he does for fun, is sit in the hotel room and look at new places and put pins in the map. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I could spend hours doing that stuff, just looking at areas and marking it. I've got so many Onyx pins dropped in places I'll probably never get to check out.
All over the country.
But places where I have a chance to mark them and then go out and actually scout it and then, mark the actual sign and beds and stuff that I find. It's pretty crazy how accurate you can be with once you get a little bit of experience doing it.
So, yeah, I can read a map. I was a Eagle Scout when I was younger, and, a map, I can get around in the mountains and whatever else. That part I get. What I have a hard time doing is looking at a map and being like, that's where the deer should be. I can tell you what the mountain looks like. I can tell you how to get in and out. But what I struggle with is, where on that mountain should I start looking?
Okay. So that's a good point. Jared, how would you answer that?
So where I hunt in West Virginia, it's kind of monotonous timber. So I'm looking for really subtle transition edges. You're walking through open hardwoods, and then you've got, transition edges from, heavier cover into open timber. And a lot of times I'll get on Google Earth and go back in the history. It's got the little slider at the top. You can drop back in time, and a lot of times you can get an aerial image that's in the wintertime. And I'm looking for those transition edges, and I'm combining that with terrain features. So if I could find a bench on a leeward hillside that's got, you can see the, in a wintertime aerial, if you can see patches of heavier cover on those leeward hillsides, I'm looking at those transition edges on the downwind side of that. And, you can find buck beds really quick doing that. Basically anywhere on the map where I can see several different things coming together, where you've got open grass, pasture field, that butts up against heavy cover or timber or any kind of water. It's been said a million times that deer are creatures of edge. So, anytime you can find those transition lines and combine that with your terrain features, that's what I'm always looking for.
I do the same thing. I'm looking for a confluence of things that affect deer movement. So I'm looking somewhere where the pressure is going to affect deer movement, where the terrain is going to bottle them down, where their preferred bedding cover or access to food is going to funnel them down. And then I'm looking for something that's going to give me an advantage. And usually that is some sort of funnel. And a funnel, it can be anything. It doesn't have to be a saddle on a mountain. It could be a bend in a creek. It could be a thick spot like you talked about, maybe an old cutover where they're going to walk the edge. And maybe there's a big, huge edge with tons of timber, but then in this one spot, it necks down to give the deer a smaller place to access. Well, I'm going to focus in on that because it gives me an advantage. And that's where I almost always start. I'm always starting to look at funnels. Funnels in between a bed to feed pattern, or funnels in between where I suspect are different bedding areas. So then it depends on, when I'm hunting. If I'm hunting in the rut, I may focus on more of those bedding funnels that may link two or three suspected bedding areas together. And if I'm not hunting that, then you're looking for me. I'm looking to get in close to a transition point from a bed to feed pattern. So it really just depends on on what time of year I'm hunting. If we're talking an out-of-state hunt where you have a very tight time window, most guys are probably going to focus that on the rut, I would think. But it's definitely not like a one-size-fits-all answer to that question, I don't think.
Well, and we're going to be – that public land challenge is early. I mean, that's early season.
That's super – it's opening week,
so
I
we're
think.
Not – there's not going to be a lot of rut activity, so it's – you know, now you're looking for a different type of deer. You know, their habits are going to be a little bit different at that point.
Yeah. In my experience, that early part of the October like that, I mean, that's kind of my bread and butter in West Virginia because pressure is very low. There's not a lot of guys hunting yet because it's still really hot out. So I'm getting in super tight to these buck beds that I've kind of scouted over the past couple of years. And those bucks, when they get up in the evening, they are not moving far at all. I mean, they may have a destination food source that's, you know, a quarter mile, half mile away, but they're not making it there until 9-10 o'clock at night. I mean, the deer I'm seeing, they stand up and they're just browsing around their bed, and they may make it 80 yards before dark. So that's how tight you have to get in on them. And on a, you know, out of state trip where you don't have time to scout, it gets pretty tough to do that.
Well, and that's a classic infall deal. Get right on them because they're not going to move much until, you know, that first little bit, and then it's too dark to see them anyways.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, all of the successful big buck killers over the years, they have related to bedding cover in some regard. You know, Infault makes a very particular point that he focuses on buck beds. Eberhardt, he doesn't do that. But when you look at his methods, and he talks about getting in tight to bedding cover or what he would call like a primary scrape area, something like that, he's generally hunting tight buck bedding cover. He's just not really focused on specific beds.
Right, yeah. He's focusing on more of a kind of a small area that's going to hold some deer. And I kind of do the same thing. If I don't know exactly where the beds are at, I'm getting super tight to, you know, as close as I can to where I think they're going to be, and then make my adjustments based on that. One of my spots in particular, it's basically like a 40-acre select cut timber that's maybe 5 years old. And in the early season, there'll be a pile of bucks in there, and they all bed pretty close proximity to each other. So, I mean, there's really only two exit trails they can use. So, you know, once I identified that, I mean, it's a dynamite spot in the early season. I don't really need to know exactly where they're bedding at. I'm just getting super close to, you know, the majority of it.
Well, and in the early season, you have the advantage that foliage is on the tree. It's a blessing and a curse. So you can get in a little bit tighter because you can't see for miles in the woods because there's still plenty of leaves around and bushes are still all have their leaves and everything. So maybe you could sneak in a little bit tighter. And like you said, they're not as pressured. So maybe they're a little bit more relaxed and they'll put up with a little bit more noise.
Yep.
So you could get in super tight. Now, I'm not what you would call a buck bed hunter. Only because where I hunt and live, it's just impossible. I mean, you guys have all seen it where I hunt. I mean, everything looks the same. I guess in some ways West Virginia is similar because you're hunting big tracts of timber. So everything kind of looks the same. But, I mean, there's no terrain features where I live.
Yeah, that's where I would struggle.
Except for water.
Yeah.
Just water is really the only terrain feature. There's no hills. It's pine thickets. It's little draws of hardwoods, and it's palmettos or, you know, palmetto stands. That's all it is. And it's like miles and miles and miles and miles of it.
Yeah, that flat terrain like that, I think I would struggle. I mean, in that situation, you're going to focus more on the transition edges and probably water. I mean, I really rely on, terrain to make my decisions where I'm going to hunt. So that's just what I've always done. So that, the flat swamp countries, that's definitely a different animal right there.
I end up keying in on terrain. I try to use the river to my advantage a lot. That is probably 70% of my strategy is using the river for access. That's a big part of what I do. But then from there, I tend to focus on feed. I'm looking for white oaks, for persimmons, for stuff like that, because we don't have a lot of it where I am. Not a lot of white oaks. We got plenty of oak trees, lots of red oaks, pin oaks, and black oaks, but not a whole lot of swamp chestnut oaks, which are the big, huge acorns, and then the white oaks. So if I find that in an area that I can access without any deer knowing that I'm there, I'll hunt it even if I don't see a lot of buck sign, just because I know that it's a good spot for me to access, since I focus so much on access.
Well, and there's so much water down there. I mean, you've got the river, but also, I mean, it's a swamp. There's water everywhere. And anytime you try and get near the water down there, it was so thick that even just getting through it was hard. It was weird. I mean, we did find some deer sign while we were marching around in there, but it's nothing like what I would find up here.
It seemed like the buck sign that I found when I was hunting in Georgia were on the very, very slight elevation changes that were close to water. So I'm assuming that they use those, you know, it's like a foot or two elevation difference where there's not any water. So I'm assuming that they use that for travel.
They do. And the pigs use that a lot too. The pigs like to get on those little high spots too. And the deer are constantly competing with the pigs for that stuff. But, you know, so if you can key in on that stuff, which is difficult, and where I live, the only way to find that stuff is boots on the ground, because you're not going to see those elevation changes on a map. So it makes it a little bit more difficult. But every region has its challenges. I mean, you have your challenges in West Virginia with the big freaking hills that you're hunting, and Ernie has a different set of challenges here in Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes, because you got lots of water you got to contend with too, I would think.
Well, and you know, we have a lot of pressure. It's not so bad if you can get away from the Twin Cities, but the population of Minneapolis is so high compared to the public land that's within an hour's drive that it just gets beat up. You know, it's nothing to, especially during rifle season. I mean, you can't go a couple hundred yards in the woods without seeing three or four orange vests hanging.
Yeah, now when you go to an area, Jared, so if you're going to a new piece of public, we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but let's say you're going to a new area, you've done your cyber scouting, you've gotten the time off work. Well, you don't have to get time off work pretty much anymore, but before that, before you were a professional saddle hunter and you're showing up for an out-of-state hunt, what are you doing like the first 3 days?
I mean, the first 3 days, I'm going to rely pretty heavy on what I've marked on that map, and I'm just going to go straight to those spots, and, you know, I'm checking for sign, I'm looking for rubs. Probably on an out-of-state trip like that, I'm not going to get super aggressive trying to find buck beds. Now, if I would happen to jump one or something while I'm in there looking, I would obviously use that to my advantage. But, you know, it's basically just sticking to what I've done on that map and, you know, not getting sidetracked and just going straight to those spots. And, you know, if those don't pan out, and, you know, then I'm obviously going to have to work a little harder and find some more spots to check out. But
so it's Friday and you cut off from work early at lunch, and you got your buddy and you and Grant, y'all drive to Kentucky or wherever, Illinois, pick the state. You drive there Friday, you get there late Friday night, get all your gear set up. What are you doing Saturday morning?
So I'm going to go in after daylight. You know, I'm going to work my way into an area slowly that I've cyber scouted and just scout my way in basically. You know, I'm not planning on going in before daylight and setting up, because really I don't think you're going to do much good in that situation, because you've never been there. You don't know anything about the area. So really you're just going to probably stink up the area and, you know, spook everything out of there. So, you know, I'm going to go in that morning, you know, kind of slow, just scout my way in, not really planning on setting up anywhere. But, you know, I'm basically just looking for sign as I'm, you know, working that area that I've cyber scouted.
So you're basically scouting with your saddle and your bow, in case you pop onto something.
Yeah, exactly.
So I took a different approach the last big out-of-state hunt that I did. Me and my brother went to Illinois, and we had probably 40 spots marked on a map. And what we did is we showed up Friday night or whatever, got settled in, and then Saturday morning, we just went straight to scouting. We left the bows at home. We left the saddles at home. We didn't bring climbing sticks. We went, and we weren't trying to be quiet. We weren't trying to be stealthy. We went and just started looking at spots and seeing if the spots that we were marking were making sense. And then what we were doing is we were extrapolating that and looking at, okay, so now we kind of understand how the terrain works. And we took the things that we learned on Saturday and Sunday. We spent 2 full days scouting. Didn't even take our bows. We just went and looked at spots. And then we were able to take that information and then apply it broadly to the rest, you know. And so, okay, now we have a feel for how the state of Illinois looks and how it sets up and how we think the pressure is based on these 10 or 12 spots we were able to check in 2 days. And then we kind of apply that to the rest of the area and go from there. And it worked for us. I mean, we sacrificed 2 full days for just straight scouting. And then we both got on mature bucks. By the end of the hunt, it was successful for us. So it worked really well. That might be a strategy that works for some people. It sounds like you do it a little different, but at the end of the day, it sounds like you spend your first little bit of time scouting.
Yeah, I mean, you say sacrifice your hunt for scouting, but I don't think it's ever a sacrifice. I mean, you have to get that information. If you're going in and just setting up hoping something's going to happen, I mean, your chances of success are a lot lower, I feel like. I mean, you've got to put the time in, you know, the boots on the ground. You know, that's something that I've really focused on the last few years, is trying to scout, you know, more than a hunt. You know, that's obviously hard to do sometimes, but, you know, before I would always just go set up in a random spot and hope that I get lucky. But, I mean, one of my hunts last year was a prime example of that. I mean, I basically went into an area blind, and I wasn't even going to set up unless I found what I was looking for, and basically scouted my way in and found some hot buck sign and set up on it right there. And I killed a buck 2 hours later. So, I mean, if I wouldn't have checked that area out, you know, I probably would have been just sitting some other spot, you know, hoping that something come by. And I'm pretty sure it probably wouldn't have came together like that.
Yeah. I'm a bad person for, even on my scouting, it's like, well, what's over the next hill? What's over the next hill? And it's like, next thing you know, I walked past the best sign I saw all day, and I'm an hour deeper in the woods than I need to be. Because, yeah, it's always like, there's got to be something better right over there, right over there.
That's a good point. It's a really good point. I think maybe that's why it's important to do that cyber scouting and that plan ahead of time. So, Jared, you even mentioned this. Like you said, you stay focused on those points to try to keep you from being that way. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I mean, you're going to, you know, doing it that way, you know, staying focused on the spots that you marked, you're going to miss areas. I mean, but you've only got so much time you can put into, you know, finding a spot to hunt. So, I mean, if you've got a 10,000 acre parcel, I mean, you can't just run all over it and expect to find, you know, everything you need to find. You have to break it down, you know, find the areas that, you know, aren't going to be that productive. I mean, sure, there's going to be spots you miss doing that. But, I mean, you have to be able to write off, you know, 90% of that area to find, you know, what you're looking for. And then, you know, as you start finding sign, really spending the time and breaking it down and figuring out why exactly they're using it.
One of my favorite things in the world to do is to go in blind and go in and check new places. Now, not everybody's like that. A lot of people,
it gives me anxiety.
Okay, there you go. Exact opposite. See, I love it. A lot of people, like in my family, they like to find spots and then hunt those same spots kind of year after year that have produced deer. I guess I'm an explorer at heart, and I always like going in and finding new places. It's just part of the fun for me is looking at a map, figuring it out, and then going and checking it out and seeing if I can make something work out of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably my favorite thing too. I'm the same way. I love checking out new spots and trying to figure it out. You know, that's, you know, you can get stuck in a rut pretty easy if you, you know, you keep hunting the same spots over and over. You know, you learn how they initially travel and all that stuff, and then, you know, you hunt it over and over and over again. I mean, you're not learning anything really. I mean, the more you get out and the more places you look at, I mean, you're learning something new every time. And then when you can associate that back to your cyber scouting, you know, it just gets easier the more you do it to find those areas that are really good just based off a map.
Well, and I think for me, I love doing it postseason scouting.
Yeah.
I don't like doing it going into a place blind and being like, oh, okay, the stress is on. I got 4 days. I got to figure this out. But if I can go do it postseason and really get a feel for the land and whatever else, and then I've got that kind of tucked away in my memory for next year, that's a lot more fun. I just, when you only got a few days and you're trying to figure it out, and, you know, I don't claim to be the best hunter in the world anyway, so it just adds stress.
Well, I love postseason scouting. I mean, January and February for me are just a blast because I live in the South where we don't have to worry about snow. And in January and February, there's no snakes and gators out bothering me either. So I love walking through the swamps and my areas to hunt in January and February and picking out spots and then just imagining what it's going to be like next fall. That is one of my favorite things in the world to do.
Yeah, mine too. I mean, that's when I find the majority of the spots that I'm going to hunt for the fall is, you know, that, you know, February, March time frame. I'm going out and I'm just tromping all over the place, you know, getting right into bedding areas and finding exactly what they're doing. And I mean, that's, you know, you can see all the sign from the previous rut. So it's the best time to be out there.
Y'all are insane. I don't even leave the house in February.
Well, yeah.
Well, you're a little bit different, Ernie.
If I lived in the North Pole like you do, I wouldn't either.
Seriously, I just feel like from middle of January till April, I just don't leave the house. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, I remember those times. I mean, when I was stationed at Fort Drum, New York, on the northeast tip of Lake Ontario, right basically on the Canadian border, I mean, we dealt with those winters. And yeah, it's a thing. I mean, what do they call it? Sad seasonal affect disorder, where you just get depressed because it's gray and gloomy and cold everywhere you go.
Yeah, and I don't like cold to start with. Like, you've seen hunting with me in the last year, I carry more clothes than probably anybody because I just hate being cold. And then to, you know, even sometimes here in November and December, I've had to hunt in 15 below. And it's just like,
now, something that might help you, Ernie, that I don't know if you know, is that there are actually 49 other states in the country, and a whole bunch of those don't have temperatures that get to 15 below.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all can learn new things, and maybe you could learn that.
Yeah. I'm actually really looking forward to doing a lot of southern hunting this year, because it wears on a guy, and by the time, I don't know, by the time the 1st of December gets here, I get a little burnt out, not of hunting, just of being cold. So when Saddlepalooza comes along and it's nice weather, I mean, that's just great because it gives me a chance to get back into the woods without having to pay the temperature price.
Yeah, speaking of Saddlepalooza, I actually just got the call back from the installation from Fort Stewart. She just called me back because I started that conversation with them to go ahead and start getting it worked out for next February. So
nice.
I'll talk to them this week and line everything out. So we'll be ready to go at the end of next February for another Saddlepalooza event. That'll be fun.
Nice.
Well, you're going to get some southern hunting in for sure. Of course, every time you go hunting now outside of your state, it's southern hunting.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But we're going to Georgia. We're going to be in Georgia in late October, early November. That's going to be fun with Josh. I'm excited about that.
We got Missouri that second part of November. And again, we're not talking 10-degree days. It's going to be a lot nicer.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually went down to Atlanta this spring when we went down to do the TMA testing on all the saddles and platforms and everything, and we prepped a bunch of spots. There's a buddy of ours named Josh. He lives there in Atlanta, and he didn't do much, he pretty much just watched me and Ernie do all the work. This is true. This isn't just BSing since he's not here to defend himself. He basically walked us into an area, and then he was like, yep, I've seen a lot of deer here. There's lots of big bucks. So then me and Ernie would pick the tree, and then I would start drilling the tree or prepping the tree, hanging the stands, drilling it out, whatever we decided to do. And then Ernie would start trimming all the trees and clearing out lanes, and Josh is just kind of sitting around with his hands in his pockets, just cracking jokes.
Well, it's a nice gig if you can get it, right? I mean, he basically took a crew of construction guys into his best hunting zones to make them better for him.
So he's got all of his spots prepped, ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, and they're dynamite spots, too.
They're great spots. And he's saying, yeah, I'm not going to hunt any of these spots right. until you guys get here. We're going to save them for you.
Yeah, you'll show up and there'll be a bunch of blue cans sitting at the base of the tree.
Yeah, I don't know about that guy.
He loves his blue cans.
He does love his blue cans. Yeah, it's a...
That's going to be a fun hunt.
It's going to be a fun hunt. This whole season, you know, the three of us in this truck right now, we are some of the world's first ever professional saddle hunters.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Because
right? That's what we do now, the three of us. And kind of our job is to go out and hunt from saddles.
I mean, it's a pretty hard job, and I don't think that many guys would want to do it. But, I mean, we're going to sacrifice what we have to make it happen, I guess.
I'll tell you, I can't wait to see between us and DIY Sportsman who gets their elk out of a saddle this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be super cool.
Yeah, Garrett, if you're listening, I'm coming for you, bro. Yeah, I know you got a week on me going to Colorado first, but we're going to Montana. And I've hunted both Colorado and Montana, and in my opinion, Montana is better for elk hunting. So I think we got a small leg up. However, Garrett is a much better hunter than me, so he probably has a leg up there.
Oh, and he's got a weak head start.
Now, are you going to film, Ernie, or how are you going to do it?
Well, you know, my filming repertoire is pretty limited, but we'll see what I can piece together.
We're
going
to have to train you up, Ernie.
Yeah, so I'm going to film. I'm going to try to be the first guy to get a saddle bull elk killed.
So you're going
to
self-film?
I'm going to self-film the whole trip in Montana and try to be the first guy. When I told Garrett about that, he goes, I'm like, yeah, Garrett, this is what I want to do. I'm so pumped. I want to try to get one down from a saddle. I was so excited. And he goes, he looks at me and he's like, when are you going, Greg? And I said, well, I'm going the third week of September. And he goes, huh, okay. I'm going the first week or the second week. He's like, I got a head start. I'm going to beat you. It's going to be fun. That's something that's actually pretty exciting for we've heard a lot of guys from the West talk about how the saddle hunting from the Manis could be like a super big advantage for them, because I think for the most part, tree stands have been kind of an overlooked tactic out West, because, you know, you're dealing with the mountains and the hills and long walks, and people don't want to do it as
nobody
a general
rule. Nobody wants to carry it.
I mean, you can speak to this. You grew up in the mountains.
I make sure I'm in the woods elk hunting every year, and I cover a lot of ground, you know, easy 5 to 10 miles a day. And, I'm not carrying a tree stand for 10 miles every day in case I see a place I want to set up. But like our Manis saddle, throw that in a pocket in my backpack and you don't even know it's there. I'm working on a couple of different climbing methods that are going to be equally as light. And then I'll carry them. You know, my spotting scope weighs more than my saddle. So I'll carry them with me. And if I happen to find some hot sign, a wallow, something that I want to sit and it's quite a ways back in the woods, there's really no penalty for me to have that stuff with me. And if I don't, and I hike all day and I come right back out to camp and I never use it, once again, it's okay. Who cares? There's nothing to it.
So that's what I was going to ask you guys. What's your climbing method going to be for those type of hunts like that?
I got to look up the legalities of hunting on the public land where we're going to be in Montana, because I'm not sure, but I need to look and check. If it's not illegal to drill into the trees, then I think we both kind of talked about maybe taking some bolts and a tree hopper drill. If it is illegal, then I'll just take a set of Hawk Helium sticks and with an aider and do it that way. Because I don't think I'll have to get as high. Well, I guess you just never know. I don't know what the terrain's going to be like. I mean, I know what the terrain's going to be like, but in a specific spot where I might find a wallow or a transition, a saddle or something like that, it's tough to say. So I don't really know. I think I'm going to take bolts, and I think I'm going to take my climbing sticks, and maybe I'll take spurs. I don't really know.
Well, I'm going to have my spurs there. I'm going to have bolts there. I'm not taking sticks. I'm not going to carry sticks all day.
So what if it's illegal?
I'm going to try and play around with that Cranford strap on with a an aider.
Okay.
So I can fold up that Cranford tie-on stick and a five-step aider and maybe have six of those in my backpack, because I don't really care what they weigh. I mean, your beast sticks, your hawk sticks, they're all light. They're just too bulky me to carry all day. So I would rather pay a little bit of a weight penalty and have something that fits in my pack, and I'm not going to be hanging it up on branches. And, you know, because I'm most of the time I'm cross country. I'm not walking, you know, on a big road or whatever else. So I'm covering a lot of ground, and I just don't like getting hung up on stuff as I'm going. I like to be as nimble as I can be.
Yeah, that makes sense. If you were going to go, Jared, what would you use?
I would probably use some kind of strap-on step like the Cranford with an aider, or maybe even the one stick method, which I've done that a lot in the past, so carrying one stick wouldn't be so bad. I haven't really thought about it. I've actually kicking around the idea of doing a backpack whitetail hunt in West Virginia in the mountains. I've got a spot that's about 4 miles from the trailhead, which is a pretty good ways. I mean, it's up some pretty good elevation as well. So I've been kind of thinking through my setup, what I would use for that. And I think I would change up my tether and lineman's belt to something a little bit lighter.
You know, Jared, you just reminded me of something. I'm not taking any of that stuff. I'm taking a rope and a throw bag.
Oh, you'd do like a SRT?
NL SRT up. I'm very comfortable with that method of climbing. And rope can sit in my backpack with a throw bag and never cause me an issue. That's going to be a lot less work for me than trying to strap on any kind of a stick and aider and whatever. Because in the elk woods, you're not up tight to those elk generally anyways. You're going to be sitting there, and they're coming from quite a distance to get to these locations, so you can make a little more noise. I'm taking a spool of rope. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, there you go.
Because if you're sitting at I'm assuming we're going to be sitting at a wallow.
Yeah, I mean, generally a wallow or a creek crossing, something like that. But, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I got to go dig through my rope buckets and get the pieces together, but that's what I'm going to take.
If you dig around in your truck, that stuff's probably laying back here somewhere.
I'm not even lying. I think there is a Mad Rock Ascender in the back there underneath your seat somewhere.
I'm sure there is.
We've got about 3,000 feet of Versa strap laying right here.
Yeah.
We've got it all.
Got it all, for sure. So this West Virginia mountain hunt, talk to me about that. That sounds kind of exciting.
So it's actually a spot that I just kind of found cyber scouting. It's where two huge ridge systems connect together by a skinny little saddle. And it's kind of in an area that we had backpacked before. And I was curious about this area, and my wife and I, we took a little weekend trip and backpacked in there, and there's no established campsites. This is a wilderness area in West Virginia, and there was no sign of anybody being back in there. And I checked out this little connecting ridge, and it was just covered in rubs and scrapes.
Now, when you say a small connecting ridge, give me an idea of distance and area.
Okay, so you've got a big drainage that comes up from a river that's probably 3 miles. And at the head of that drainage is where this little small connector is. And you've got a big ridge to the east and a big ridge to the west. So these two ridges are probably, oh geez, I don't even know how many acres it would be. I mean, they're both ridges are probably 2 miles square. I mean, it's a huge
area.
Ridge system.
And what's the funnel look like?
So it's just a small it's a saddle as well, but it's just a small little connecting piece that's maybe, I don't know, 400 yards long by 100 yards wide.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the kind of spot that I live for.
And, I mean, this is a spot that probably sees zero pressure, I would imagine. So.
And you, when you scouted it, there was buck sign everywhere?
Yeah, that connecting ridge was just covered in buck sign. Big rubs, scrapes. And, I mean, this is big, big timber.
The deer density's got to be pretty low, right?
Very low. So to find concentration of sign like that in that area, I mean, it just tells me that during the rut, I mean, it just gets, I'm sure that there's bucks cruising through there. It's hard to get to, but it's one of those things I've always wanted to do. I mean, killing a buck like that in the big mountains of West Virginia is pretty tough. So I think it would be super cool to do. It'd definitely be an adventure. I mean, this is terrain that rivals out west. I mean, you have 1,500 foot elevation changes from top to bottom. So it's pretty extreme country.
So when you get this big swamp donkey down, you going to quarter it up and pack it out?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
got to be the only
yeah,
way,
that's
right?
the only way you could do it. And I think that's why a lot of these places like this don't get hunted that much, because it's, I don't know if people just don't think to do that, but it's like in the area where I'm at, like quartering a deer up is like never talked about. It's, you know, people just don't do that stuff. So.
Well, and it also could be people don't want to put in the work. I mean, I remember my first DIY backcountry elk hunt in Colorado many, many years ago. I mean, I remember at one particular place we walked to thinking, man, I don't even want to shoot one back
yeah.
there, because then I got to get it out and I don't want to do it. It would have just killed me. So I can imagine people think the same thing in the hills of West Virginia. Like, man, how am I going to I can't get my four wheeler back there to get the
yeah.
deer out.
Yeah. I mean, and you're hiking in, you know, 4 miles. I mean, there's not many people that's going to hike that far to hunt for a day. I mean, you've pretty much got to pack your gear in on your back and just plan on staying out there. And there's not a lot of people that do that kind of stuff in the East, I think, anyway.
Well, we just drove into Iowa. We just crossed the state line. I haven't seen a booner yet.
Yeah, there is no deer here at all.
All those people that talk about hunting Iowa are full of it. There's no booners here. We've been in the state for 15 seconds. Haven't even seen a Pope and Young, much less a booner. It's funny, last year me and Ernie came down here, and it was in September, and I'd never been in the state of Iowa before, and you probably remember, it was really foggy that day. Do you remember that? It was really foggy. It was early in the morning, and when we crossed the state line, I, like, sit up in my chair. I'm, like, looking. I'm like, oh, man, there's going to be deer everywhere. I'm so excited. We did not see a single deer, and we drove the state of Iowa from north to south. The entire state, north to south.
In the same day.
There and back. And we did not see the first deer. Those guys from the hunting public, they're full of it. I don't think they're actually hunting in Iowa. I think they're hunting in the neighboring states and just they just make it all up.
We were a little earlier in the day that day, too. I mean, it's 9 o'clock, you know, a lot of the movement's down, but we were coming through at like 7 last time and still nothing.
It was early. I mean, we should have seen deer if there were any in this state. They're just not here.
And now the corn's all up, so it's tough to see anything this time of year.
Well, it sounds like we've all got some pretty busy fall schedules ahead of us. I know we're going to be hunting all over the country. Ernie, you listed all the states. You're going to like 6 or 7 states. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, it's going to be by far the busiest season I've ever had. And it's like, well, we got 3 days open here. Should we try and add another state? My wife would have a different answer for you, but yeah, we're looking.
Jared, anything you want to say before we close it out?
No, I'm just excited, man. Season's right around the corner, so I'm looking. I still need to get out, and I don't have any cameras or anything out yet, so I'm here in the next week or two. I'm going to get out and put some boots on the ground and finalize some spots to hit early on. So, yeah, I'm just excited to get stuff rolling.
I actually don't have any cameras out either. Well, that's not true. I have a lot of cameras out, but they don't have any batteries in them because I left them in the woods from last year. Man, I'm frustrated. I actually lost my deer lease this from this past fall. Last year I got into a deer lease because it's right across the street from my house. I can literally walk to it. It's that close to my house. 5,000 acres. Awesome. And the reason I got into it is because, you know, my son, my son was 11, 12, and, you know, he was wanting to start hunting with me some more. And the way I hunt on the rivers and public land and in the swamps, not really conducive, you know, walking in and out with a saddle in and out every time, setting up in a new spot. It just not real conducive to getting kids involved in hunting. So I got into this deer lease so I could get Jackson involved more. And I went and I spent basically my whole season last year scouting because I didn't get in until the summer. So I spent part of the summer scouting, and then most of the season I did a lot of in-season scouting and prepping stuff and getting it ready for him. And this year was just going to be the year. You know, I had done all the work, and then it was my fault, but I missed the deposit window to get back into the club, and the dude... I'm so mad at this guy. I hope he's not listening because I want to get back in the next year. But I'm so mad at this guy because instead of giving me a courtesy text, I'm telling the truth here. So I legitimately missed the deposit window. And I knew the deposit window. He said, you know, it was February 15th or whatever it was, whatever the date was. This was the date you had to have your deposit in. Well, I didn't make it because I forgot. I was busy, whatever. And I texted him, you know, after that. And I said, hey, man, I missed the deposit. I'll get it to you soon. And he said, okay, get it to me as quick as you can. A couple days later, a week later, whatever, I don't remember. He sends a text, and he said, hey, this was on a Sunday. I remember it. And he sent it this was Saturday. And he said, hey, tomorrow, Sunday, I'm going to be at the lease up at the pond at the lease working on kind of the campground area. So you guys can swing by and give me your deposit. I couldn't do it. I think I was on a field exercise or something. I was busy. I couldn't make it there. So I didn't get it to him. Like literally that week or just a few days after that, I texted him back and I said, hey man, I couldn't make it there. I was busy. I'm going to swing it by your house. Can I come by? And he just says, I gave your spot away. Now, I got it. I missed the deadline. I should have
a couple times.
Yeah, a couple times.
But isn't it like a courtesy that he could have said, "Hey, man," or there was
chance.
A bunch of people. It wasn't just me. It was. I think he said seven or eight guys. He could have sent a text. He could have posted on the Facebook message board. He could have sent an email. That's we communicate that way the whole year. I mean. He could have just said, all right, guys, March 1st, this is your last day. If you don't have it in by March 1st, I'm giving it out. He just gave my spot away. So I've got cameras out there. I've got sticks out there. I got to go pick them up, and I don't know.
I kind of think you're at fault here, bud.
I am at fault. I'm definitely at fault. I'm not saying I'm not. I definitely missed the deadline. But I don't know. Am I way off that he could have at least said, hey, this is the last day? You know, if you don't have it in by then, maybe not. Maybe I'm just being a baby. But anyway, so I haven't done much scouting because I've been bummed about that. I've called him and texted him trying to get back into the club and no dice. But I also think I was shooting ducks during deer season. And I think he maybe got mad at me about that. So maybe I think he wanted me out. I'm not sure, but... Anyway, nobody cares about my hunting lease problems. Well, we better close it up. We've been talking for an hour here. Anything you want to leave everybody with, Ernie, Jared?
I don't think so.
No, I'm just excited for a new year. It's a new face on everything. Lots of cool things coming up.
Awesome. We'll wrap it up there. Appreciate you guys listening. Check it out next time, and we will catch you guys down the road.